guys, welcome to episode 152 of Stacey's Pop Culture Parlour. I am your host, the titular Stace, and joining me in the parlour this month is returning champion and absolutely delightful human being. It's Holly Swinyard. Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Welcome back to the parlour.
It is absolutely lovely to be back. It's been a while. Yeah, there are more Ninja Turtles now.
Yeah, there are so many more. I'm in a different room now, and I've been allowed to, this is like my space now, and I've been allowed to take over just the whole area with turtles. There are some like non-turtles things over there, but not many of them.
I don't want to see those. I just want to see the turtles.
No, there's lovely. Oh no, Raphael's fell over. Don't get distracted. Like the problem with this room is that my house is literally, there's like my house, the back garden, the M6 motorway.
Yeah.
So the house like almost constantly just rattles whenever anything big goes down the motorway, which means I'm almost constantly shitting myself because something on a shelf has fallen over. So sometimes when I'm on a work call, yeah, well, I mean, it could be a ghost, who knows? Oh, that Michelangelo's fell over, and oh, fuck's sake. Stop looking at shelves. Welcome back. Let's try that again. How's it been since, according to Skype, we haven't had a chat since 2022, which seems insane.
That does sound insane. Wow. I know. I'm sorry. It's been a while.
It's not your fault. It's my fault for only doing monthly episodes because I'm too lazy to edit more than that.
I have my own podcast now. That's what's happened since 2022. Started last year. And I do feel like people who listen to this will probably be into it because it's
called
I'm a fan of that. And it's a podcast with me and my wonderful friend, Dr. Vivian Asamoah, who is a pop culture anthropologist. And we talk about fandom and fan culture through we pick an object every week, every 2 weeks, I should say. And we use that as a starting point to discuss an element of fandom through like an anthropological and, because I would call myself an amateur historian at this point, and historical lens, depending on whose episode it is. It's really fun. We have a lot of laughs, and we're recording series two at the moment, which is good because we decided we would do series breaks because we don't hate ourselves. And also we can edit out when we say stupid nonsense.
I mean, I am almost constantly saying stupid nonsense. Like, the parlour would just be my guest if I edited out all of my own stupid nonsense. But, no, I don't blame you. I sometimes wish that I'd done series, because then you could have a little wee break. But then also I think I'd probably go a little bit bananas during those wee breaks because I do love talking.
Well, we plan during those breaks, and we also do one-offs. We have it that we do a special... So the reason me and Vivian met was because I know a stupid amount about cosplay, and that's how I became a fandom historian, was just getting really obsessed with cosplay history and then just going down a rabbit hole of like, I love fandom history, this is so insane. And Vivian was writing a much more academic book about cosplay than anything I've ever written, but the Cosplay Journal gets to pretend it's academic, so, you know, that's fun. Mm-hmm. I get emails from students and university professors on an almost monthly basis, be like, hi, that's can brilliant. I talk to you? Which is a strange legacy to have. It's when you're like the BBC just randomly send you things, be like, can you talk to us about this? Be like, yeah, I can. Yeah. Okay, I'm the only journalist in the country who knows enough about, I don't even want to call myself a journalist. I kind of pretend to be a journalist. The only writer in the country who knows enough about cosplay to talk about it on the BBC. But yeah, it's a really fun podcast. And we met because we wanted to talk about cosplay. So we do one episode a season that we get to talk about cosplay. And we do that as the separate episode at the end. Mm-hmm. So it's a special episode. Though, of course, we do talk about cosplay a lot in the other episodes as well. And we actually, this season, we may have a jingle for Ollie Talks About a Special Interest, which is like, are we going to talk about Terry Pratchett or cosplay or Sherlock Holmes? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Ollie's special interest time. Yay.
I should get like a soundboard that's just got one button on it and it's Stacey's about to talk about the turtles. And then she presses it and everybody switches off for a little
bit. I will mention Terry Pratchett at least once an episode, and I'm also likely to talk about like sort of eldritch horror most episodes, to the point that we've had to do two episodes of series, that one is about monsters and one is about eldritch horror, purely so that I can it's not even about monsters, it's about the Babadook.
Okay.
Because we wanted to talk about queerness and monstrous representation, and the Babadook is obviously a bi icon.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm sure you'll have talked much more eloquently about it at the time, but I had a really like sort of visceral reaction to the Babadook getting sort of claimed as a queer icon. Because I was like, but it's the literal representation of depression. Do we want this?
Like, I mean, it is very funny. There's an irony to it.
It is funny. But on the other hand, it's sort of like, can we not do better than this for queer horror icons?
To be fair, I don't want to spoil it because the episodes will come out from May. But I talked at length about The Shape of Water in that episode as well. So,
okay.
You know, because
an interesting film.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love The Shape of Water so much. It's one of my favourite films of all time. And I think we gave Guillermo del Toro too much power by giving him an Oscar after that, because I feel like telling him the monster fucker film was, good enough for an Oscar, which it is. It is beautiful and an incredible film. Yeah. But he now has too much power, because I've watched Tales of Arcadia, which everyone should watch. It's great. It's a kids show based on a book he wrote that he's involved with at Trollhunters. Three Below, Wizards, and then Tales of Arcadia are the overarching title. And the questionable at points. There is definitely alien empreg in that series.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a good show. Good show.
Is it?
Is it? No, no. Yeah. I mean, it's very good. I don't want to put people off. I love it. Trollhunters and Wizards specifically are great. Yeah. Three Below is fine. I like it, but it's not as good as the other two.
Mm.
It doesn't have a cat dragon in it. Wizards has a cat dragon. Sorry. But anyway, listen to the podcast because it's funny and fun.
Listen to that. It sounds great. Thing.
Thank you. I'm really proud of it. Like, it's, you know, it's a slow burn. Each episode is about an hour. But you get to hear me go, so, Shakespeare festivals. Yeah, they're a thing. They're like Comic-Con, but for Shakespeare nerds.
Oh, no, I would not... people would not like me at Shakespeare festivals. But I think I fully blame my terrible English teachers for that, who were not good at teaching Shakespeare and just made me feel quite thick.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Not really fair. I think I love Shakespeare. Shakespeare is wonderful. It's very funny and it's very silly and also beautiful and tragic and all those things because it's Shakespeare. And I am so sad that so many people don't know how to interact with it because they've been taught it badly at school.
Mm.
Oh, hence why I did a whole episode about how there was a Shakespeare festival that I wanted to talk about.
that's very fair. Yeah, I've had to start literally trying specifically to not talk about turtles every episode, even though like every episode is a month apart. And I mean, I don't
more
know if
turtle stuff paying, happens.
I was gonna say, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news, but like obviously this year is the 40th anniversary of the turtles, which who baby that makes me feel quite old. I mean, I'm not 40 yet, but I'm not far off.
Is that 40th anniversary of the comic?
The comic, yeah.
Right, okay, yeah.
Came out May 5th, I think, 84. And so this year they've just gone, what about a new video game and a different new video game and a TV show and about three different comics, like new comics, and what about a live action The Last Ronin? And I was just like, I'm trying really hard here not to look like a lunatic about Tiny Mutant Boys. but no, they've ruined it for me this year. And they've also ruined my wallet, because Rich and I did a massive sort out of our house last year, because we had about three just huge Perspex boxes full of action figures and Funkos that were just under the stairs because there's literally nowhere to put them. And we were like, this can't continue, like this is stupid. Yeah. Let's sort them out, let's donate some, let's sell some others, let's gift them around to people, and then we'll pick a franchise and we'll just stick like a franchise each and we'll just stick with that. And I was like, I'll just stick with it'd be fine. Oh my god, like the past 2 years it's just been like every other week it's like, what about this new figure? I'm like, why I don't earn enough money for this.
I'm so glad I didn't get collector autism. I mean, I have spurious information autism and talk till the cows come home about my favorite thing autism, but I didn't get collector autism. I have very specific items that I want more than anything else in the world, and I will like focus on that thing and then I don't need it. But then I am a cosplayer, so I have a very expensive, time consuming, space consuming hobby that involves me buying lots and lots of craft equipment. Oh shit, no, I did get collector autism. It's just I want crafting equipment.
Yeah, I've always been quite glad. As much as I am, every time I see somebody in cosplay, I get almost immediately smacked with just a buttload of jealousy, because I wish I could make my own clothes, make rad costumes, and look fucking fantastic like all of these people do. But on the other hand, I just think, well, at least, because it's so expensive.
Oh, yeah. I probably should tell you, you can buy decent quality costumes now, like that sort of thing.
No, the other problem that I have as well is being plus size. It's like, oh, plus size are you? Everything's 50% more expensive. Oh, cheers. thanks
or just doesn't exist.
Yeah, or that. Yeah, yeah. In fact, I quite often have to just like randomly get clothes made. Just go on Etsy. There's a couple of Etsy people that are like quite local to me that I'm like, if I just wang this fabric at you, can you address? And they're like, yeah, sure, fine.
No, cosplay is a stupidly expensive hobby.
But it's so, but the thing is, it's
so fun.
That I was going to say, the good thing about your hobby is that, because with mine, I definitely have, I'm not like diagnosed or anything, but I suspect there's a touch of the tism about me.
I'm looking at all the Ninja Turtles and going, yeah, maybe.
I think there's almost certainly ADHD with the side of the tism. And, but the thing about mine is that none of it is stuff that I've accomplished myself. So it's like, there's no bragging rights there. That's just me going, I have some disposable cash, I guess. Whereas you can be like, look at this fucking rad thing that I made with my own bare hands and sweat. And you're like, wow, that's actually really awesome.
And when I got my big... Oh, that's what's happened since the last time we talked. I won a really cool trophy. I won the Discworld International Masquerade.
That's amazing.
That was really fun. And I got the best trophy in the world, which is Silver Gilt Discworld. It's about this big. And I have to give it back this year, which is sad because it goes on to the next person. It's a sort of continuous trophy rather than one you keep.
Did you take it to a trophy store and get them to make a replica? Because that's exactly what I would do.
No. So what I've actually got is that the model that it is one that was created by the Discworld Emporium many moons ago. But they do a smaller version of it, which I've bought to put in the place of it and will have engraved with my winning and all that kind of stuff on it as a little keepsake. Because I can't keep this one because it was commissioned specifically by Terry Pratchett and belongs to the Pratchett estate and has to go back.
Yeah.
So that was quite an exciting thing to own for a while.
That is exciting. I have won one award in my life. And it didn't come with an award. You know this. It was for Reagan and Starburst.
Yeah. Of course
you know. My mum got really
upset. I get to call it an award-winning.
Yes.
I get to call it an award-winning podcast. Very exciting.
But my mum got really upset by the fact that it didn't come with an actual physical award. Oh. So she had one made. So that's
too. That's so sweet.
Isn't that adorable? We went out for dinner one day and she was like, here you go, and just handed me this like glass trophy. I was like, oh my god,
that's so lovely. Oh my god. So last year this is a cool thing, I was filming a documentary last year about cosplay stuff, which was cool, and they wanted to film my trophy. And then my mum was like, oh, you should get your other trophies. And I was like, oh, no, not the ones that are like kids' karate trophies. Oh, God, okay. Yeah. Because obviously, brilliant. Like, most cosplay competitions do not have a big, cool trophy.
Mm.
And so I had to, like, get them all out and put them on the side and be like, oh, okay. These ones are not as impressive. They're sort of national competitions or smaller competitions, definitely. Because I haven't done anything for ages either. Like, this was that one I did in 2022. It was the first time I competed in about 6 years. And it was because it was Discworld. It's like my favourite thing. It's like one of my favourite things. And it was a really big deal to do it for me, like to get on like that stage and do it. Because also they have a big performance element to it, which is very different from most cosplay competitions, which is great fun. And I was like, oh, now I have to get all these ones I won in like 2050. Like, oh, okay. Yeah, they're very nice, but they're not that one. I haven't done anything anywhere near as impressive as that in a while.
A trophy's a trophy. I love a trophy. Yeah. I do. I was having a whinge the other day because, and I talked about this on Stace and Barry in the morning, that in the rational side of my brain knows that unless you were doing a competition like that where you are literally judged, you know, then and there, and people decide based on like actual things.
And there's like a score sheet and everything, you know.
Yeah,
it's proper.
Unless you're doing a sort of competition-y type thing like that, like most awards are like guff. Like the Oscars are guff. That's just one guy's or a small handful of like guys.
Don't get me started on the Hugo Awards. I want one desperately, I have opinions.
But this is the other thing, you see, is that I know that awards are guff, but every time a podcast award thing comes up, I'll always have a little look. Have a little look, see how much they charge for you for entry, because I am very reluctant to pay for the privilege of not even getting shortlisted. But every time I see a little podcast award thing, I'm like, be nice to have one though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no, I know.
Just have that.
Why we claim yours for Reagan and Starburst? I'm an award-winning podcast maker. Thank you. Yes, I am.
I still don't know how I won that. I still haven't listened.
Because you were great. You're so good in it.
I'm still so scared that because everybody else on the show was like so fucking amazing, I'm still really scared that I'm like a big amateur sore thumb. So I just haven't listened to it because I was like, just don't put yourself through that. Mm-hmm. Everybody else should listen to it.
Yeah, and they should. Everyone should listen to it. They should listen to that because it's good. And I will maybe make a series 3 at some point. I have it plotted. But I just haven't got the time. I've got a billion projects on. I'm writing another book. I've got a new book coming out. I'm writing two others.
Mm-hmm. Do you
want to
plug the new book?
Oh, yes, plug the new book. Yeah. I have a new book, which is called A History of Fans and Fandom. The Passion and Power of Fan Culture, which is a great title for a book. And it's got a really cool cover of a clone trooper cosplayer taking his helmet off. It looks very cool. And the title's a little bit misleading. It's not actually a full history because that would be an insane thing to do.
That would be a huge book.
So it kind of touches on things, but it's mostly, I would call it a social commentary and history and a mix of personal essays and interviews with various people throughout fandom academia, as well as people who are fan community builders, creators, journalists, academics, all that kind of stuff, while touching on the history of certain elements, as well as so we do a kind of a deep dive into like the timeline of like fandom, kind of starting of roughly around sort of Sherlock Holmes stuff. Mm-hmm. And I briefly talk about things that happened before there with manias and things like that, all the way through to now, with a big diversion into Star Trek, because of course it's Star Trek.
Of course.
But yeah. Star Trek,
standard.
Right? Yeah. And then we talk a lot about, so the whole book is sort of, each chapter is a question, who, what, where, when, why, essentially. Because I kind of feel like that goes through fandom quite well. And it's a social commentary. It's essays, personal essays is mixed with these interviews, personal stories from various different people, as well as like the history elements of it as well. So I've had some interesting reviews from people who really wanted a straight history, and that's not what they got, particularly because I write like I talk to a certain extent. So it's got this slightly strange humor to it of like, I'm going to be silly, because this is particularly, there's a whole section about Gamergate. And I have to write it incredibly straight. And it's essentially just, this is what happened. And it's very dry, that bit, because I was like, I cannot make jokes about this. And so literally afterwards, there is a chapter heading that says, time to have a break, have a Kit Kat. And then that's it. The page is then blank. This was so dark. I had to go into it. And it was so horrible researching it. I didn't even go down the full rabbit hole of Gamergate because I couldn't do it. No. It was like, it's horrible. And also talking about things like what happened to, what was his name? The kid from Heartstopper, where he was essentially forced to come out by the fan base and all this sort of stuff, and the whole history of Anne Rice and everything that happened between her and her fans, and there was a lot of stuff like that I had to kind of look into, and she's just not fun. So I can totally get that some people maybe wanted a straight history, and maybe it wasn't for them, and that's fine. But the people who get it, have the reviews have been wonderful for that, which has been great. I would call it a love letter to fan culture and pop culture in general, and the way that we make things, and how people love stories. Humans freaking love stories.
We really do.
Yeah.
We do.
I had one review that told me I defined fan fiction wrong, and I wanted to be like, there are at least 3 subchapters in this book about different types of fandom and fan fiction, and just because I defined it slightly differently in the little opening, here's some words I'm going to use, and maybe you need to know what they are, but does not mean I don't know what they are. You're just being really pedantic, and it annoyed me so much, but also made me laugh so much to be like, fan fiction has changed its meaning over the entire course of its history so many times. And I know that because I've read about it so deeply at this point. And I just wanted to be like, this is the sort of comment I'm going to get on this sort of book. It's very funny. But it's definitely, I think it's a bit of a Marmite for people. I think some people want like the straight history, and I didn't pick the title. My publisher did, but that's fine.
I prefer my sort of, I wouldn't want, I don't personally like history to be dry, because then I just, it will go in one ear and out of the other.
Yeah, I didn't want it to be an academic book. I wanted it to be a book that I would read, and it's a book I would read. And that's what I wanted to do. I'm really proud of it. And genuinely, going from that into writing the next nonfiction book I'm going to write, which is about drag kings and mm-hmm. gender nonconforming human beings in general, but specifically drag kings, not rather than drag queens, because I feel like there's a lot of stuff out there about drag queens at the moment.
Yeah.
And we don't talk about the kings so much. Trying to sell that to people is quite fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, but like, it's a very different thing, because it feels like it was a really positive book to write, and it made me genuinely very happy, and the conversations I had with people were so uplifting and wonderful and affirming, and just like, I could feel like every single person I talked to, there was a connection of like, oh, you get it,
mm-hmm.
oh, this is good, and that's what I really, when people get this book, I can see that same connection hit them, to be like, yes, this is it, there it is. And I think that's the whole point. If people don't get it, they didn't make the connection, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when they do, it's really evident, to be like, yes, this is it. I feel like I'm not selling this book, like, because obviously, you know, some people didn't get it, and that's fine. I like, not every book's for every person, but
if there's one thing I've had to learn at being a woman on the internet with opinions, it's that not everything is for everyone, and that's okay. Exactly. Like, you don't have to appeal to every single person, and like, this is why I hate, just to get my bee in my bonnet about all those like Twitter accounts and stuff that try and tell you how to podcast properly, and they're like,
oh, I know,
you know, the exact length of podcast has got to be, and the exact amount of like hosts, and blah, and I'm like, or you could just do what you're passionate about, what you enjoy, and if other people happen to listen to it, then great.
Yeah, exactly. I have a very similar thing with people who tell people how to get published and stuff like that, and I'm like, there is no one way to do it. There's no one way to get an agent. I mean, I say that as somebody who doesn't currently have an agent, so maybe I'm wrong, but like, you know, but I am a published writer. I have 3 books out. I am, you know, I work for multiple magazines. I work on tabletop gaming. I write video games, all this sort of stuff. So I am in the industry. I know that has happened to me, and there is no one way to do it. And a large amount of it is luck. A large amount of it is being in the right place at the right time, having the right conversation with the right person, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds awful, I think, because I think it's quite a scary thing to say to people, to be like, it's, you just got to keep trying, you know. Yeah. And I would also say that you will never feel like you've managed to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it doesn't work like that. So it frustrates me a lot when people are like, this is the way you do it, this is how you get published, this is how you get an agent's attention, this is, and I'm like, or you'll just get the right thing at the right time, and that will happen, or it won't happen, and you go a different route and you try something else, you know. But right or wrong way is very irritating. But yes, people don't like it when women have opinions. I almost wonder if I'd have put a male name on the book if I'd had different reviews.
That would actually be really interesting to know, wouldn't it?
And I don't want to do that.
No, I think I had a conversation the other day with somebody about how like they were asking me like why my podcast doesn't get more listeners and stuff, and I was like, well, I'll be completely honest, I'm not that bothered. I do this much more for me than I do for anybody else, and the fact that other people want to get involved is a lovely jubbly bonus to me. I do it because I love talking shit with my mates for 2 hours.
That's the best reason. That's why I do it. That's why I do anything. Yeah.
But they were like, oh, why don't you do X, Y, and Z advertising, or like guest on this or go on that? And I was like, because a little bit of it, I think, is a bit self-sabotage, because I like rolling under the radar of people who are going to be having issues with my opinions.
I masquerade as a journalist from time to time, and I masquerade as a games journalist, which I think is very funny, because games is a way of telling stories, and I like talking about stories, so yeah. Mm-hmm. It's fine. I'm not going to talk about mechanics, it's not my vibe, but I can definitely talk about the storytelling elements and the visuals and all that kind of thing. So it's fine. Yeah. But this does mean that the first time that my name appeared in a major gaming publication, I had to make my accounts private.
Of course.
And I was just like, my editor had to get involved. It got pretty bad at one point. It wasn't bad, but it was just like a little bit like, I just need to tell you this has happened because it's creepy. But it's so frustrating. And I'm like, I want to make a living, continue to make a living out of being in pop culture and doing pop culture stuff. I shouldn't have to be afraid of that. I shouldn't have to be afraid of, like we talked about Gamergate, I shouldn't have to be afraid of something like that happening or worse, you know? That's, yeah. And that's insane.
There was a thing going on over the weekend with, I'm not going to name any names because I don't want anybody just like digging it up and like, but there was a comic creator who was posting about how he quite regularly gets death threats. And like, you know, we were both saying before we were recording that pop culture is, and the arts are like hugely important. Like I would have gone fully doolally during lockdown, especially when Rich was in hospital.
Yeah.
During that sort of like 10 days, if I hadn't have had access to like Ben Schwartz and Friends and other comedy stuff, I just don't think I would have coped even a teeny weeny bit with him being in hospital during a lockdown. But at the same time, like it's not that you should, there shouldn't be any bit of pop culture that should be bad enough that you should think, I'm gonna send a death threat to the creator of that.
Yeah,
like that's genuine to me. I just like, I can't fathom like what level of, because again, not to bring it back to the Turtles, but I know I am a huge wanker, like fangirl wanker about the Turtles. If there was a bad Turtles comic, I'd just be like, oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
And I'd move on with my life. But and like I think about, like it's literally a hyperfixation. I think about the Turtles at least 3 or 4 times a day, like just randomly.
I mean, I'm quite, so I would say my hyperfixation things, the ones that have been like permanent fixations in my life, not the ones that sort of come like I this is one of those things. You say you've got ADHD with a side of TISM. I feel like I have TISM with a side of ADHD, right? So I have two columns of hyperfixations. I have the special interests, which remain forever, but they might fade in and out, but they're always living in my brain somewhere. And then I have like the hyperfixations, and every so often one moves over to the special interest column. And almost without fail, all of my permanent special interests, apart from Star Wars, but okay, and I've never been someone to be like, I'm gonna take Star Wars super seriously, it's Star Wars, but almost all of them I'm like, oh, I'm so glad these are written by dead old people. I'm here going, yes, I'm sure that I would have been very annoying to Conan Doyle in the past, but he's dead, so it's fine. And oh, I'm P.G. Woodhouse, what, no, he's dead, it's fine. Even Terry Pratchett, it's okay, he can't be annoyed by me. I don't know if he would be, but he can't be. So
yeah, I just think it's like, to me it's just truly baffling.
No, I don't
that
understand
anybody's
it.
First like, response to a dislike of something isn't, oh well,
yeah,
like
no,
that their response is actively hassling people, like what's, or, that,
yeah, for? I don't
what
get it
achieve?
And I don't know whether it's because I'm a creator in that I actively, like I said, I am actively writing a novel at the moment rather than non-fiction, but I've also written a lot of fiction in the form of podcasts and games and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know whether it's that where I'm like, if somebody got really pissed off at me for not telling the story they wanted, but telling the story I wanted to tell, I'd be really annoyed. And so I don't want to do that to other people, because I'm like, I'm not in control of this story. So if they're telling it, it's what they want to tell. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. And that may not be exactly what I would have liked to happen, but I still have to enjoy it for what it is rather than what I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people aren't really capable of doing that. They're like, but this isn't what I wanted and therefore it's bad. And it's like, no, there's a difference between bad and not exactly how you wanted this to fall into place.
Yeah.
It's just different. And that can be, there can be critique of that, but it's a different kind of critique. It's not, I find it very frustrating because I literally, if my work, my books I hope will be published, ever got big enough that people were like having theories and stuff about them and then they didn't play out the way that those theories wanted and they got mad at me for it, I'd be like, I've had these stories in my head since I was 10. You can't change them because you want them to change. You know, they are just the stories I want to tell.
Like you say as well, there's a difference between you disliking something. Like, Star Wars is a really good example for me. Like, I genuinely hated The Rise of Skywalker. I thought it was
it's awful.
The stupidest things I've ever seen in my entire life. So what did I do? I went on Twitter and I said, oh, this is one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in my life. And then I moved on with my life. I had a teeny rant with my also nerdy friends who mostly agreed with me. And then we moved on with our lives. Like, at no point did I, like, you know, bully an actor off of social media or... Like, I don't understand where the
I don't think I even said anything. Goes. I think because I'd had such a shit time of people ranting about how they didn't like The Last Jedi. And
I
loved it. It's brilliant. It's beautiful. It's absolutely
so good.
It's so good. Right. And I had such a bad time with people getting so mad about it. And then, like, being like, I don't want to be that person to somebody else. Like, I just don't. So I don't think I ever even said anything online other than, like, I think I've said stuff now where it's, like, not such a big deal. But I went to the midnight showing where they showed the first two and then the Rise of Skywalker. I went dressed as General Hux with my partner dressed as Kylo Ren and just sat in the cinema, like...
Oh, I know it.
Like, and oh my god, the amount of shit I got for cosplaying Hux as well. I was just like, he is a fictional villain. He's not real.
It's fine, yeah.
He's just, it's the same as cosplaying Darth Vader. Stop it. Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. I find these pennies very weird. And, like, I have retired him because we live in a scary world now where I don't think it's appropriate. But at the time, I was just like, really? Really? We're going to do that? Okay, cool. No. No, sitting in the cinema watching that film, like, literally just like well, literally my head in my hands. Like, I don't know what's happening.
It was my husband's face, because I've always been what I consider to be like a casual Star Wars observer, in the sense that, like, I've seen all the movies, but I don't, like, read the comics. I haven't seen any of the cartoons. I've watched a couple of the live action TV shows just because Rich watches them, but I'm not.
Because
everybody says that. I really should.
It's good. But, like, I mean, I have them tattooed on my arm, so, like, I will say that. I have my shrine to tech.
I've got a tattoo since the last time we spoke.
Oh.
I have, yeah. It's unsurprisingly Ninja Turtles related.
Yay.
yes, honorary member of the Hamato clan.
Nice.
But yeah, sitting in the cinema, just turning to look at Rich's face as the crawl started, and it was like somehow Palpatine's ear. His face was literally like a thunder. I was like, oh no.
And now it's so funny because they're having to, like, work out how to include how that happened into canon. And in the same way that the Clone Wars fixed so much of the issues with the prequels, like, the piecing together of how Palpatine is there is so much better than the payoff of him being there. And it's like, damn it.
I still maintain the only good thing about that film is Kylo Ren in what was essentially a boyfriend jumper.
Yep,
absolutely. Thumbs up job done.
I don't think I have anything redeemable to say about that film. No, nothing.
No.
It took away everything I loved about the first two.
I've talked about The Last Jedi till the cows come home.
We don't need to go there. We're both going to get angry about it.
Well, I think as well, I believe the last time you were here, we talked a lot about Star Wars. Because I think Boba Fett was on the telly.
Oh, it was.
Yeah. So do you want to, because we've just talked an awful lot about tangentially fan-related things.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about some things we've actually been, like, watching and experiencing?
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. Would you
Won't be Star Wars.
No. Is there something that you would like to open with? Because I do quite like to be a bit of a gracious host. And
I actually just binged the first five episodes of X-Men 97. I wasn't going to watch it because I'm actually a little bit too young to have watched the original series of that. So actually my X-Men cartoon is X-Men Evolution, which I'm aware is, like, the most fanficky version of the X-Men ever, but I fucking love it, right? It's still great. I don't care. And it's the reason I binged the most recent, the new series, is because I fell in love with Kurt Wagner in X-Men Evolution aged about. And the thing is, I realized now that it was just gender envy and I actually just really want to be him.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, non-binary, cute, elfin. He's totally my thing. And then I saw that he was going to be in episode 5 and I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to watch. And then I watched all of them pretty much in one go. I think it was two sittings I watched them in because I was on holiday. Mm-hmm. And
your face,
I was sobbing. I was absolutely, episode 5 was just, oh my god. And, like, because I've been a big comic book fan for a long time, right, a really long time. I don't really read comics anymore because I can't afford to. They're expensive and there's too many. I worked in a comic book shop all the way through university, all that kind of stuff, so, like, I am that person. I've cosplayed so if I just tell you, I've cosplayed Gambit. I love Gambit. So much. He's second. It's like Nightcrawler and then Gambit, right? That's my.
Are we the same person? Because those are my two favourites too.
Yeah, and then also Magneto, of course. I've been obsessed with Magneto since the films. I just find him fascinating. He's one of those villains, in inverted commas, that I love, and I've always, like, I also just love all the Maximoffs in general. They're like a big thing. I've cosplayed Wiccan. The vibes, you know. So yeah, they're kind of my vibe when it comes to the X-Men, is that sort of group of characters. It was so fun. episode 5. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but it was so fun. But I also feel like the hint is that, like, from what the creators have said online, is that they're going to now be creating a new lineup for this cartoon. It's not just a nostalgia fest, they're doing something new with it, which I really like. That we sort of got rid of a lot of the originator characters and we're going to have this new version. The fact that we're seeing lots of background characters of characters we know, like Pixie is very heavily shown in the last episode, as is Glob Herman, which I loved. I'm so happy seeing him in the background. But we've seen, and obviously we've got Sunspot is being introduced into this series from episode 1 as well, and I adore Sunspot. I'm a big fan of the new mutants in general. I've also cosplayed as Cypher, specifically Duglock version of Cypher, with like all the patterns that he's my bae. I love the new mutants, so I'm really excited to see where they go with it. But Nightcrawler was just wonderful in that episode. All the other stuff aside, I was so happy. He is adorable and the voice is perfect and he's perfect, and they put him in a sexy little tux and I was like, ah, yay, it's my fuzzy blue elf, and now he's gonna hang out with Wolverine, and I'm so excited because I love him and Wolverine together. They're just so funny. They're a wonderful friendship, so I'm really excited to see where it goes. But also, like, it was horrific.
Yeah,
and the animation is astonishing, like, considering that they're still replicating that original type of animation, for them to get it to look how it's just brilliant.
See, now I was not to rag on the animation, because everybody who's ever heard the pilot before should know that I am like a huge animation fan, absolutely adore it, and I've got so much respect for animators, because it's literally magic what they do. It's like I can't even fathom how they accomplish what they accomplish. It's amazing. But there's something about the X-Men 97 animation that doesn't work for my brain, and I can't put my finger on what it is at all. I don't think it's bad, it just jars in my head.
I think
head.
It's a little bit static, and I think that's on purpose, because it's trying to look like the original, but I think they could make a little bit more fluid. It's why I think Nightcrawler worked better, is because you get the jumps, and so he works really well.
It was in episode 5, and it was a bit of, I can't remember if it was the X-Men's jet or if it was just a random, you know, flying vehicle, but I noticed it sort of like almost like hopping along the sky, and I was like, is that what my problem is, that it looks jerky? I don't know. But I hadn't intended to watch it, because you're probably gonna have a massive go at me now, I don't really care for the X-Men that much. Because it's interesting, because my reason why I don't really like the X-Men is the reason why a lot of other people do, which is it's too much of a political allegory for, you know, prejudices and things, and I just find it too heavy. So, like, where a lot of people probably read it and really related to it and glommed onto it for that reason, I was just like, this is sad and dour, and I can't.
I mean, a lot of it is. So, just in case people, I loved X-Men Evolution, which also means that my favorite run in the comics is Wolverine in the X-Men when he's running the school, because it's the same vibe. And one of my actual favorite characters from the comics is Quentin Quire. I adore Quentin, and I really, really hope they put him in the series, because I think that would be an excellent choice of character to put in the show.
I think that the reason why Gambit and Nightcrawler are my two favourites is because they're the ones that are allowed to have a sense of humour.
They're fun, Even like Nightcrawler's got like the darkest backstory in it. He's so much fun. And he's so sweet.
Also, I'm so jealous of that power. If I get it, you know that question everybody always asks, like, if you could have one super, oh my God, it would absolutely be Bamfing. Yeah. Because imagine if you could just be like, oh, I've got to be at this place in 10 minutes. Poof, I'm there. Don't even worry about it, bro. Like, oh, I'd love that.
Also, the opening of X-Men 2 with the scene with Nightcrawler attacking the president is one of the greatest pieces of cinema ever. It's just so brilliant. Alan Cumming was genius casting for Nightcrawler, and then they didn't do it well enough.
There was a lot of quite good casting, but bad execution.
Yeah, because he would have been the one.
That's happened a lot in the X-Men movies across the board.
I mean, I definitely came to the X-Men through the movies and the Evolution, as I've said, and I really like the first two movies. They're good. Particularly X2 is one. I still can watch it. It's good fun. But
I liked them at the time, but I don't think I've watched. I've not had the inclination to watch any of them.
I've rewatched X2 mostly just so I could have an opinion on it and make sure I still liked it. And it definitely is of its time. But enough of it holds up for me to not be mad. And Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart are good in it, of course.
Oh gosh, they're so amazing.
And they're so. And I think that Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart doing anything together is wonderful. So I'm okay with that. But yeah, no, it's weird, isn't it? Like, X-Men, I do think again, it's a Marmite thing for people. You're either going to love it or you're not. And I think that, I do think there's an X-Men thing for everyone, but it might not be the comics, which sounds so crazy, but...
Well, I mean, so yeah, I'd not intended to watch this cartoon because I didn't watch the original. Mostly I was aware of the original because of it having an excellent theme tune.
Yeah. And
it really does. So I hadn't intended to watch this, but my hubby was watching it. So I'm like, I'm in the room, I might as well. Mm-hmm. And I thought the first four episodes were like absolutely fine. Yeah. So it's absolutely fine. The end of episode five, I'm fully blarting.
I feel like what they did was go, we're going to give you this.
From?
They're going to give you this big nostalgia fest for the first four episodes and like start to build the story up and all that kind of stuff, and then be like, and everything changes.
Here's the feels.
Yeah. And it's like, oh no. Yeah. Oh. But yeah, it's very good. I, like I said, up until about episode five, I was like, it's fine. I'll keep watching it because it's fun. Yeah. You know, it's fine. And then episode five was so good. The sheer change in tone. I was just like,
yeah.
Oh, damn. You did so much in half an hour. Well done.
Have to give a hats off to Gambit's voice actor as well. Like, he's so good. And I've been following him on Twitter as well. He's wonderful. He keeps wandering around wearing that crop top from that one episode. I'm like, I love you. You're the best guy.
That's amazing.
You win the award for best guy. Like, yeah. Love him.
But I kind of feel like the X-Men, I'll agree the turtles. I feel like there is turtles for everybody. It's just, you just got to find the right turtles, you know. Not everyone is going to be into 2003 turtles. Like me. I fucking love 2003 Turtles.
Oh my god, I just watched those for the first time like a year ago.
So good.
Oh my god, it's so good. Fully blarted at several episodes of that as well.
Oh yeah. But
also, I mean, much more fuel onto my why do all the writers hate Donatello fire?
Yeah.
Because there's so many episodes.
They all hate Donatello, don't
they? Let's fuck him over for a laugh. I'm like, why? That's not funny.
Why did he get mutated for what the heck? Poor Donnie.
Oh my god. It was the same as It Never Was episode that got me, where he gets flung into that future where there's no version of him and everything's gone to shit, and he has to watch his brothers die. I'm like, what are we doing this for?
What are we doing? I think it's because a lot of writers don't know how to make Donnie interesting because they grew up with the idea that he wasn't compared to the others, and I'm like, you are wrong. Donnie's great. Stop doing this to him.
It's interesting because I'm in the middle of a rewatch. Well, I say rewatch. I've been rewatching the 87 Turtles cartoon. Mm. And I say rewatching in commas because I'm pretty sure I only saw like the first three seasons that they just kept repeating.
Yeah.
on the TV as a kid. And Donatello's a sarcastic little shit and I love him. He's so funny.
I think the new film, the one that came out, was a couple years ago?
Oh, Mutant Mayhem. Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good, actually. I think they nailed it with that. Mm. I'm not necessarily a fan of the storyline they picked. That's fine. Okay. Mostly because I really can't stand Bebop and Rocksteady at all.
Yeah.
And also because I found out that Bebop recently is also a type of music. And so is Rocksteady. Like, I didn't realise they were actually types of music because I'm stupid. And that also they are heavily related to African-American culture. And then I went, oh no, these characters are actually racist. Oh no. Oh
yeah. So I don't know if it'll make you feel any better at all, but in the 87 cartoon, one of them was black before they got mutated. And that's why they went into that music. It's still icky.
I have a lot of the 98 cartoon, whatever it's called, that one, the original one. So, the reason I really like the 2003 version is because I had read enough of the comics, the original comics, before then, to be like, oh, this is very close to the original source. With the storylines they picked particularly, I have always liked the Futuroid storyline. I think it's great. So good. Professor Honeycutt.
I love him.
Wonderful and should be included in everything ever. And the fact that there are people out there who love Ninja Turtles and don't know who Professor Honeycutt is makes me really sad.
Mad.
Because
absolutely
he's
mad.
Brilliant. And the Triceratons? Are it's been a while. Such a cool, and it's just cool because it kind of puts the turtles in, and the same with the whole thing with the sort of shonen mystical showdown competition thing that I've also forgotten was called.
The Battle Nexus.
And I'm gonna be honest, just putting Usagi in there, like, yes, love Usagi, let's go Rabbit Samurai, and him and Leo definitely having a thing for each other is adorable.
Oh, in my head, they are together.
They are. They're married.
They frequently hop dimensions for a little chat.
Yeah, they gave each other swords. That's like the gayest thing you could ever do. It's so very homoerotic.
Adorable. They're so adorable.
I know. I love them. They're so sweet. Anyway, but like there are people who don't know this version of the Turtles, and I'm like, please, this is wonderful. But also, it's very dark. Mm-hmm. And so when I went back to watch the original cartoon, I was A, like, what is this? And B, also, why is Baxter Stockman white? And also, why is, particularly having read the original comics, why is April white? That's the one I've always kind of had a thing of, like, why, what? That's really strange. But yeah, just a lot of the kind of, I guess a lot of the analogy and what they were trying to talk about. And I know that the Ninja Turtles is a rip on Daredevil, I know, like, but then it stops being that and it starts being its own thing. And I just kind of a bit like, I would love to see more of what the 2003 version did. Because where did you watch it? Because did you see the lost season? Like the final season that got lost?
The Back to the Sewers.
The one with the dragons.
Okay. So there's more than that. So that's season 5. And then there's a season where they go to the future.
Yes, I've seen that one. That one's weird.
Fast forward. And then there's a season where they come back, which is Back to the Sewers.
Oh.
So I've seen all 7.
New things. I get to go and watch this. I'll probably watch it and then be like, I have seen this, but I've probably watched it out.
You might do. And to be honest, I will say, like, I think season...
I've seen the one to the future.
Three and 4 are my favourite. Yeah. 2 seasons, and then I think maybe like Fast Forward and Back to the Sewers might actually be crap, but there's enough like good jokes and bits in there. Like there's this one recurring joke that I found absolutely hilarious in the future where Raph keeps falling for holograms and trying
to
rush them, but then like landing in a puddle or whatever. Yeah. And so, I just found that really funny.
So I absolutely adored the full proper storyline with the Ooptron, because doing that properly is great. And also because I like the fact that Leo got to actually exercise some of his demons, which is nice for Leo every so often to be like, oh no, we're actually going to get rid of the angst and let Leo be happy. Yay! In the same way that like I feel like every writer gives Donnie this kind of rubbish personality and therefore we have to give him pain to make him interesting. They just make Leo so sad all the time. I'm like, please stop. he could do other things. We weren't going to talk about the Turtles and now we are. I think there is a, like, what the point was that I think there's a version of the Turtles for everyone. For me, it is that version. I like that's the best version that, for me. I love it. I adore the storylines they did. I love the comics. It got me interested. It introduced me to Usagi, which is one of my now favorite comics of all time. I adore Usagi as a character, and everything around it is wonderful. But that doesn't necessarily mean I don't like other versions of it. I liked Mutant Mayhem. I enjoyed it. There was enough for me to enjoy in it. I actually quite like the version, the Ninja Turtles. Is it 2012?
The one with Patrick Stewart. Action.
No.
Oh, the 2007 one. Yeah.
That one, I quite like that one too. It's weird.
I don't mind that. The plot doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
No, but it's got that fight scene between Leo and Raph, which is possibly one of the just so brilliant. It's so good. It's so good. I will watch that whole film just for that scene. And then the bit where Raph turns up with Master Shredder and is like breaks down about the whole thing. Oh my god, yeah, like it's just so good. Sorry,
never apologize for Turtles, love. You don't.
I love that. I absolutely love that film.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to rewatch it and see if it's as good as I remember.
Well, to be fair, so I rewatched it quite recently an episode of And Why Not podcast, and I'll be honest, like it's still a really fun romp. Like the plot doesn't really make any sense.
Does any of the plot of Ninja Turtles films make any
sense? Well, this is the thing. Not particularly. No,
I didn't think Mutant Mayhem particularly made sense.
The one thing I will say about Mutant Mayhem that I liked more, I mean, I really like Mutant Mayhem. In fact, I found it really funny. I went to the Prince Charles cinema last year to see the 1990 live action movie on the big screen. And there was a Q&A with the director afterwards. And somebody asked him, like, have you seen Mutant Mayhem? And he was like, yeah, I have. It's legit the best Turtles film. And I'm not joking. Yeah. Like, it's so, like, even Steve Barron thinks it's the best one.
The animation is...
Oh, it's chef's kiss.
Genuine.
The thing that I genuinely loved about it was that they actually had like teenage voice actors for the boys. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that really struck me rewatching the 2007 one, and it's particularly with Donatello, he couldn't say more like he's about to file his taxes. Like, he's the middle-agedest man I've ever heard. It's Barry the orthodontist from Friends who does his voice in it. And I'm like, he couldn't say more. Like, although what I do love about that film is that even though it's ostensibly for kids, they get away with some jokes that are really naughty.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's that whole, like, sort of side plot of Donnie, like, running a tech helpline thing. And it's not that kind of phone line joke always gets me. I'm like, ooh, risky business. But while we're on the topic of turtles, I did actually have something turtles related that's genuine real news and not just me being a crazy person. Yes, it literally got announced like 2 days ago as we're recording this that they're going to be doing a live action movie of The Last Ronin, and it's going to be R-rated. And I'm frightened. Yeah, your face says it was pretty much my immediate... Yeah, so...
How?
Have you read The Last Ronin?
No, I haven't, but I know the premise, right?
Okay, so for anybody who doesn't know the premise, and I'm not going to spoil it, I'm literally just going to give the basic premise. The Last Ronin is set in the Mirage continuity, not the newer IDW continuity. It is set in the future. Three of the four boys are dead, and the final one is on a sort of revenge-y rampage.
I think I can guess which one it is.
do you know what? It's been out for 2 years. Go on, have a guess.
Is it? I kind of because I think everyone would think it's Raph. I think it might be Donnie. Is it Mikey? Is it Mikey?
It's Mikey.
Okay. Because that was going to be. It's going to be one of the two less murdery, because Leo wouldn't do that. Leo wouldn't, and Raph would be
get
dead.
Himself killed immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's a really, really phenomenal book. And the reason I love it so much is because it's not really a story about revenge. It's a story about, like, family and grief and survivor's guilt. And it's a really, like, emotional story. It has the potential to be a truly phenomenal movie.
But why would you make it R-rated?
There are two things that are worrying me about it. The first is that it's live action, because we're really going to have to nail down making the turtles look really good, whether that's suits or whether that's CGI. But we really have to nail that design down, because holy shit, that has the potential to be really bad.
Yeah.
Like, to like look like shit. The other thing that worries me is in the article that I read, they haven't got a director attached as yet, but there's a script writer who is Tyler Burton Smith, who is the chap behind the 2019 reboot of Child's Play.
Yeah.
And he's just done a movie.
You missed my face the moment you said his name. I literally looked like,
oh no. he's also just done a movie called Boy Kills World, which I don't think is out yet, that I watched the trailer for, and it did not assuage my fears, because
I just looked at the cover, and the design for Mikey is just brilliant.
It's phenomenal. It's That's so phenomenal. Wonderful. It's such a good, like, I would highly recommend people get the book. It's so good. It made me cry several times on a bus. Don't read comics on the bus is a thing that I learned pretty quickly.
I mean, that's to be fair, I shouldn't watch films on planes for that exact same reason. I watched Coco on a plane.
You idiot.
Right, I watched Coco on a plane going, like, on the plane to Canada as well, so I can't get off. There's no getting on the plane. I'm on this plane for 13 hours because we're going to Vancouver. I felt so sorry for the guy next to me, and I was literally there like, this is a dead dad film about halfway through, and I was just like really going, I mean, obviously it was a dead dad film, but like I was like, oh no, it's a dead dad film.
It's a dead dad film, yeah.
And then by the end I was ugly crying, like ugly crying, and just and then my mum's like, are you okay? And I'm like,
I don't think I am.
I watched that on a plane. There was another film I watched on a plane that made me do that. It was probably a Pixar film. Anyway, don't watch Pixar films on planes. It's a bad call. Particularly not when you're sat next to a man who is being very judgmental of the fact that you're ugly crying to a Pixar film.
Make sure you sat next to a friend if you're gonna blart on the plane. But that's the thing that worries me about this is, so I went to watch the trailer for Boy Kills World because I hadn't seen it, and it's a Bill Skarsgård vehicle in which he seems to just do a lot of murders with any weapons he can get his hands on. And it scared me because this book is not about I mean, there are some kick-ass action sequences in there, and it also does flashback to how the other turtles died. So yeah, there is a lot of, like, potential for gore. But I'm very scared that they're just going to go, like, super ham on the R rating. Like, oh, I've got an R rated turtles, lads. There's blood everywhere. He's got an arm off. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, just lose all the emotional heft of the story.
Like, the only... only comic book film that should be R-rated is Deadpool. That's fine. It's Deadpool, yeah. Right? I might allow it for Blade. Because I think, again, just because Blade
probably
can kind
of... Probably more for swearing.
Yeah, no, exactly. In the same way that, like, for swearing, I'd give it to... if they made a decent Constantine film.
Yes.
Yes, because it's John Constantine.
Yeah.
But otherwise, no. Nothing should have an R rating, because particularly not Ninja Turtles.
Well, this is the thing.
It's like an R-rated Transformers movie. Why?
I sort of understand them because of what the story is. I sort of understand them wanting to make sure that people know that this is not a kids' movie.
You can make it a 15. You know,
don't take your kids to see it like you yeah. might do with Mutant Mayhem, because it's going to be a bad time.
Yeah.
Do you know what the other thing that worries me about it is generally anyway? And this isn't anything to do with like the R-rated or the writers. Is I just don't think I want to see the turtles die. yeah. Like, it genuinely made me do a cry on the bus several times, and I don't think I've got it in me to see it on a screen.
Do you know what they should do instead? They should make an Usagi movie, because it desperately needs it. Mm-hmm. Because as much as I love Kung Fu Panda, I want an Usagi movie. Because particularly if you did it in the style of like a proper old school samurai film.
Samurai movie, yeah, it'd be amazing.
Like, I want it to feel like, you know, like the Seven Samurai, or even things like the animes, like blah, 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 like Afro Samurai, something like that, where you really, really lean into that kind of cultural thing. That would be so fun.
That would be really
fun.
Oh,
now I'm going to just go and read all of those.
Hey, that's if that's the one thing you take away from this conversation, I think this is pretty successful for you.
Oh, yeah. I love him so much. He's on my list of things I want to cosplay. I've just got to work out how to do it.
Yeah, I think that would be the hottest thing in the world, and there's absolutely no way I could do it.
I don't think I'd actually do it as a rabbit. I think I'd do it as like a human with ears. You know, like,
okay,
you know,
yeah,
maybe like a human, like to make the style of the wig to look like the ears, so it's like a humanized version.
Yeah,
because I don't actually want to make a fursuit.
I've got so much respect for people who can exist in suits.
I know.
Good lord.
I don't. I can't even do like full face masks on costumes. Like, I get really
I can't even do clone full face armor makeup.
I have to, like, I can't do my clone trooper properly because I have to just have the helmet off. I can't wear it. It's too much for long periods of time.
Yeah. I
have a lot of respect for it.
Yeah, me too. I have done very little cosplay in my entire life, but the one that was the absolute worst for me was when I went to a Thought Bubble as Wolverine.
I
was wearing such a big leather jacket
in
the hottest hall in the world. Oh my God, I sweat so much you wouldn't even believe. You would believe. You've probably
done it
many layers.
I don't have to wear a binder anymore. That happened.
That's amazing.
Sorry. Oh yeah, all this other stuff, but I had top surgery.
That's amazing. And
I did many years of binders in cosplay. They do suck,
especially and now, if you're a busty person,
which I was, and now I'm not anymore. Cosplay generally quite warm. Even now I have costumes that I put on, I'm like, oh, very warm already. Like the one I won that competition in is a full Regency, well, early Regency style suit made out of gold silk taffeta.
Oh
yeah, and it's got a velvet waistcoat on it.
It's warm.
There's a wig, there's a hat. There's like long socks. It's a whole thing. And it is so warm. And that's not even like, I have some things that are just, my cosplay tech from the Bad Batch, this is a tangent, but he has gloves, like no area, he has a neck seal. So the only skin that I have on show is my face.
Oof.
And you wouldn't think it's warm. It just looks like clothes and a bit of armor. But when you've only got literally your face, because you've got goggles, so it's not even my whole face. And my hair's like really heavily styled to keep it in place, so it doesn't, there's nothing coming out the top of my head either. I'm just like, I'm going to die. It's so hot. So hot. Yeah, and people don't realise how hot it gets when you stop having any skin on show.
Yeah, I had to Google quite recently, is it normal for you to get this hot after you've done a podcast for an hour and a half? And it's purely because my ears are covered by headphones. Yeah. I get stupid. I mean, you can probably tell already. I've gone very red.
I'm quite hot too, for exactly the same reason. But yeah, no, people don't realise. And I think cosplay, like, they look at cosplay, and a lot of the time, yes, there are some skimpy cosplays, all that kind of stuff. But there's already, even if you're wearing a skimpy costume, that doesn't necessarily mean you haven't actually got a lot on.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
You might, the likelihood is you'll have dance tights on, which are like what ballerinas wear, which are very tight. And yeah, also, they're not like normal tights, they're very thick as well, right? So the likelihood is you'll have that on, the likelihood is you'll have shapewear of some description on, whether it's a corset, whether it's like Spanx, whether it's like a full bodysuit thing going on. You know, the likelihood is you'll then be in something that's very uncomfortable because it is skimpy and revealing. So it's all cut in weird places and all this sort of stuff, and probably taped on in one place and all this sort of thing. You've got full face of makeup, you've got a wig, and actually most of the heat comes out the top of your head anyway. And then if you're wearing uncomfortable shoes and gloves or anything like that.
Yeah, I fully know whenever anybody's like, we're doing a fancy dress thing or we're doing a costume thing, I'm immediately like, what characters have got long dark hair, because I'm not wearing a wig.
Yeah.
If you've ever tried stuffing this much hair into a wig as well, oh it's a full-on sweat nightmare.
I'm just really glad that I now got to the point where I'm like, I have such short hair. It doesn't matter, I can kind of do wigs, it still gets very hot, but also like the amount of times where I'll just be like, I think I could just about style my hair into that character, I can't be bothered to wear a wig. Like, I have a wig for my Leon Kennedy costume because it's physically impossible to do his hair otherwise. Yeah. And then like a few others who have very distinct hairstyles, or like I just wanted a different hair color for them, and otherwise I am not gonna bother. Though I am doing a costume for EGX this year that I think I'm gonna have to wig, purely because my partner's cosplaying the other character and is having to wear a wig, and I think if I don't, it will look weird.
Where's the solidarity as well?
Yeah, and they hate it, they absolutely hate it, they get very very hot too, and they're wearing, oh, the character's meant to have like a cable knit sort of fisherman's jumper underneath his coat.
Yeah.
And I was like, they were like, I'm going to be so warm. And I'm like, it's okay, we'll just knit the cuffs and the collar.
Yeah, just this little show.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then you don't need the rest. And we'll just have like slits in the side so you can let air in. Because, so this is going to make, somebody's going to listen to this podcast and they're going to, and I'm going to be like, so this is from Pathologic. And everyone's going to go, why are you cosplaying from Pathologic? And I'm going to be like, because I like pain. But I was looking at the costumes for it and I was just like, literally, if I don't do a wig, even though I could definitely style my hair into that, it's going to look so dumb because their hair is so, like, it's, yeah, it just won't work and it's going to be very weird. But cosplay is warm and hot. And the side tangent of this is, if cosplay is hot, think about fursuits.
Again, so much respect for people in suits. Speaking of suits, though, I would kind of love it if they went. If they went Jim Henson turtle suit.
Oh, I think it would be good.
Last Ronin. Especially
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, especially if they tie it in as well, because if I remember correctly, I think The Last Ronin is supposed to be set like 30, 35 years after the Mirage, one of the comics.
All right.
So it would be the perfect time now to get Judith Hogue back as April and maybe Elias Pateas back as Casey. Yes, please and thank you.
That would be very cool.
And then, yeah, if you got, although, like, just the idea of thinking of 1990 live action movie Mikey being The Last Ronin makes me want to do a cry.
But I would love to see it, particularly since we've seen, with as much as obviously the Five Nights at Freddy's movie was as much as a mess as the Five Nights at Freddy's games, the animatronics for that film were astonishing.
Yeah, they were really, really.
And like
good.
Seeing what they could do for that, as well as what they did for the Dark Crystal series, which cancelled before its time, honestly. F in the chat for the Dark Crystal series. But like what we're seeing now coming out, particularly out of Henson Studios with My Neighbor Totoro and all that kind of stuff, the stage puppets as well.
Mm-hmm.
They could do it. They could genuinely do it, I think. I mean, what was it recently I saw that they'd done a load of puppets for and they were just astonishing? Might have been Five Nights at Freddy. They're great, though. They are great. The animatronics for that and the suits. Yeah. Which, to be fair, as much as that film was Bobbins in many ways, the games are also Bobbins. I love them. They're ridiculous. I mean, I'm not a massive fan, but I do enjoy a silly game. I was so impressed with the fact that they managed to make suits that worked how the suits in the thing, so because you've got the people inside them,
Yeah.
And I was just like, but that, and that makes them so much more scary because they are what they're meant to be, even like for practical reasons, not for being a dead body inside a robot suit reasons.
Yeah.
But it's very good. So yeah, if they can do that, I reckon we could probably get a decent turtle.
Because I will say, like, I didn't hate the two live action Michael Bay produced Turtles movies as much as everybody else does.
I think
there's a lot of fun to be had in there, but I do think the designs really let them down because the teeth are weird and they've got weird nostrils.
Yeah. Make them look like turtles. Just be turtles. It's okay.
Yeah. Just lean into the
also because they're mutants. So like you can have a lot more fun with that.
Yeah. In fact, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about how one of the reasons I love Rise of the TMNT is because each of the turtles is a different species of turtle. But I really wish they'd leaned into those different characteristics because softshell turtles, for example, have like stupidly long necks.
Yeah.
And I was like, imagine if there were just scenes where like Donatello's head just like whoo from the side.
Oh, that would be so good.
That would be so funny. Yeah. Just constantly freaking everybody out by just appearing.
But I kind of feel like we've talked so much about turtles, we shouldn't have done this, but it's fine. Yeah, but I really like when people with characters like that, and it's actually something if we talk about the X-Men again, it's something I really like, is when they really lean into the mutantness of it.
Yeah,
because like we've talked about Glob Herman. What a cool design for, I mean, it's horrific. Yeah. But like it's, what a cool awful. And like Eye Boy, I just love these really bizarre mutations, and it's like, why can't we have bizarre mutation for the turtles? It's a weird concept, so let's play with it a bit. And you can make them a bit scary. Like, actually, you know...
I think. Yeah,
let Del Toro make a Ninja Turtle movie. It would be so strange.
Well, so this article that I read the other day, I don't know how true it is because I couldn't find it. I did a bit of stalking of his social medias, but they've reported that Kevin Eastman was keen on the idea of Zack Snyder. And I was like, no, thank you.
No, thank you.
And this is coming from somebody who is not a Zack Snyder hater. I think some of his movies are great. I think some of them are fine. I think some of them are shit. He has a very sort of wishy-washy kind of I have a sort of weird relationship with his films in that some of them have blown my socks off and other ones I genuinely don't know how they got made and how they exist.
Yeah.
But I can't think of anybody worse for a turtle. Well, I could think of worse people. Somebody was like, oh my god, all right, get Robert what's his name, Rodriguez on it, and I'm like, no, please, no. I don't want it.
No,
I'm so scared of how that's gonna go. But anyway, that's enough talking about turtles for today because this is
we're banned now, we're done.
Yeah, I've talked about it, it's enough, it's fine. Are you a Ghostbusters fan perchance?
I am. Okay. My 10th birthday party was a Ghostbusters themed birthday party.
That's amazing.
My dad brought home a projector from work and connected it up to his laptop because my dad worked in sciencey things, so we had that kind of stuff available to us. And we cleared like a whole wall off, and all my friends came around, and we had Ghostbusters snacks and all this kind of stuff, and we projected the first Ghostbusters film up onto the wall.
That's amazing.
It was great.
Have you seen Frozen Empire yet?
I haven't yet.
Okay.
I'm probably going to, but I just haven't had time to go to the cinema. So it's kind of one of those things where I'm a bit like, I feel like it's probably a fun romp, but I'm not sure if it's
okay.
Brilliant cinema.
I will tell you what I think, and I will do it without spoilerage. But,
would it help that if I said that I had some issues with the previous Ghostbuster film?
Well, this
because
is
I do
this...
have issues with the previous Ghostbusters film in that as much as I enjoyed a lot of it, it relied way
so
too
dirty.
Yeah, and it relied so damn heavily on the nostalgia part of it. I didn't need them showing up at the end. I didn't need old Bill Murray to be there.
Yeah, so I was just going to sort of give a bit of my opinion on Afterlife as context for Frozen Empire, because I don't remember if I reviewed Afterlife on the Parlour or not when it came out, but I didn't particularly like that movie at all. In fact, my Letterboxd review said, if you'd have told me in the past that I would prefer a Ghostbusters movie with Melissa McCarthy in it to one with Paul Rudd in it, I would have laughed in your fucking face, but here we are.
Yeah. My favourite, the one I did like, the little girl whose name I've forgotten.
Phoebe Spengler. Yeah.
I liked her because she looked like me as a child, and that was quite entertaining.
Yeah, so my biggest issues with, I had two really big issues with Afterlife. The first was that I cannot believe any sort of world where the Ghostbusters would fuck off Egon the way that they did in Afterlife. They act like, oh, he's like predicting ghosty things and we all think he's a fucking idiot, so we've just cut him out of our lives. Now, the entire... Go on.
So I have a point to make about this in that people who seem to love Ghostbusters Afterlife are the same people who got really mad about The Last Jedi because they mischaracterized Luke Skywalker. And I'm like, if you got that mad about them mischaracterizing Luke Skywalker, why didn't you get the same level of mad about the mischaracterizing the Ghostbusters? Because as far as I'm concerned, it's the same level of mischaracterization if you're going to talk about it like that. If you're going to be like, people grow apart and that's fine and people change, so you can't be mad about the fact that Luke Skywalker got freaking nihilistic and went and lived on an island, okay? And it was the same people. But then those were also the people who didn't like the version with Melissa McCarthy, which is, I like that film.
I really like that film.
It's so funny.
I still maintain that Kate McKinnon is the coolest Ghostbuster that's been on screen.
The amount of men I saw getting so mad about Chris Hemsworth's character and just completely missing the point. And literally to my face saying, oh, you wouldn't like it if that happened to women characters. I'm like,
Amazing.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
What gets me about Afterlife as well is that there's literally a bit where they're on like the phone to Ray and he's sitting in the shop full of occult shit that he owns going, nah, Egon was bonkers, mate, leave it alone, like hanging up on the Spengler family. And I'm
best friends.
No.
And best like, friend. If you want to
and
have
he
the
was
argument.
The smart one, why would you not believe him about ghost related happenings?
And like, if you wanted to have it that they drift, that they their lives went in different directions. Fair enough. Funny. That's fine. That happens to people. And I can totally see like Bill Murray's character going off and being a bit of an arsehole because it's Bill Murray. Totally. You know?
I was going to say the character of Venkman
fully
comes across as someone who is flighty in the sense of like he'll be a Ghostbuster for a bit because it's fun and it's in the spotlight. And then as soon as he's bored with it, he'll do something else.
And like again, Winston, I can see Winston doing that as well. He would have maybe gone off and done something else with his life because that was he was kind of looking for a transitional period as a person, right? But Ray and Egon,
it's the fact that they still have Ray very fully believing in ghosts and the occult and the supernatural and like prophecies and mystic haunted bollocks. He's literally in an occult anyway, so that was my one problem. My other big problem was that it was hugely just like member berries the movie Ghostbusters. Like, do you remember the Marshmallow Man? Do you remember Slimer? Well, here's like a blue one. Like, do you remember Bill Murray? And I'm like, fuck, what are you doing? The one thing I did like about it was by the end, it did feel like a passing of the torch. And I liked the fact that this new Spengler family were going to go back to New York. And because I was missing the New York element a bit as well, which I think was down to COVID, because I think it was filmed way out in the Midwest or whatever, so that there were fewer people. So I was quite excited for Frozen Empire because I was like, okay, we've passed the torch, we can stop thinking about the other three now, we can move on with our lives. Apparently we can't.
Why are fanboys like this? Why are they like this?
It's driving me insane. I'm like why? So first of all, Finn Wolfhard's character, literally you could cut out of the film because he does nothing of consequence. He's so done dirty, like there's no point to
him
whatsoever.
And he was such a good little character, and Finn Wolfhard is great in he's really good.
He gets a sort of little side quest with Slimer that's like adorable, but it does nothing for the film except to go, Slimer's here.
Yeah.
Did you see Slimer? We've got, he's back. And I'm like, great. But yeah, it's fully like, it's just absolutely rancid with the old Ghostbusters. And I will spoil a little thing because it's not huge. Literally, the mayor of New York is back doing his "I'm gonna shut you down" stick again. Like it's just Ghostbusters 1 and 2 again, but this time there's some new people nearby. Podcast is entirely pointless as a character in it. Just no need for a podcast whatsoever.
I hate nostalgia. Nostalgia is a curse upon humanity, I swear to God. It is a drug to keep. It Karl Marx we're allowed, he probably did talk about nostalgia. It's Karl Marx, God's sake, the man talked about everything. But like, honestly, it, I swear,
it's just, it's baffling to me that they just
so
don't
bad
seem,
for people as well.
What it comes across is, it comes across that they don't have faith in these new characters to carry a movie. And it's very annoying because, no offence, Bill Murray's phoning this the fuck in.
Of course he is. He doesn't want
Dan Aykroyd is pottering around, pootling around like a lunatic, like he usually does. And Winston's there.
Yeah,
like it's just
you've got Paul Rudd in this movie, who's Paul Rudd. He's going to be great in everything, and let's be honest, he's going to love being in a Ghostbusters movie. It's Paul Rudd, right? Like, he loves it. Like, the man can play Ant-Man. I love Ant-Man, but like, all of the Ant-Man films are great because Paul Rudd's there being having a fun time and really, really enjoying it, right? That is what makes them good.
Yeah,
and he could do that with this. And like, Finn Wolfhard again is a really fun actor. He's got, you know, he's got a lot of range. I think particularly against someone like Paul Rudd, I can totally see him bouncing off that really well.
They barely interact.
So dumb. And I love the characters that they said. Phoebe and Podcast were great. I thought they were such a fun little duo.
The only
maybe I won't bother watching. I'll wait till it comes out on the
The only thing I genuinely really truly enjoyed about it was James Acaster, but I am like fully a James Acaster wanker. He looks like he could be Egon because he's got his little he's the real Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
Egon.
Yeah.
His little twirl of like, oh my god, he's so good. He's got this sort of like, you know, zany Acaster.
Maybe we could have the Kate McKinnon James Acaster Ghostbusters film.
Oh my god, I would.
It would be like. Can you imagine the two of them in one place?
It'd be chaos, I think.
Absolutely
chaos.
Amazing. I'd watch that.
But it was a real shame because I was really excited for Frozen Empire because I thought finally we're going to get like a new Ghostbusters film. But the story is essentially the same as the. I mean, that was another thing with Afterlife that annoyed me.
It was just the same story.
Well, I mean, it was literally the same as well. It was like literally Zool.
Yeah. It was boring.
It's like, what are we doing?
I'm fully a big fan of the girl Ghostbusters films. I love it. I thought it was so. I hate to call it that, but it's the only way to describe it in this.
Lady
mess.
Ghostbusters. Yeah.
Lady Ghostbusters. I just adored it. It's so funny. I'm going to be honest, right? We've talked about this. I love Ghostbusters, right? Since little 10-year-old me, love Ghostbusters. The pacing in Ghostbusters is very bad. The laughs, not so clear cut nowadays. Also, we should be very concerned about some of Venkman's opinions. But the I want to say, is it 2015, that film, something like that? The pacing is quick, the jokes are smart, it is funny, it's so self-aware. Chris Hemsworth ad-libbing is just gorgeous. He's so funny, and he's just got such wonderful comedic timing. The four of them work together so much. I love Leslie Jones so much, and people were like, there are some questionable choices with her character, but I think, you know, I still think that she really works with what she's got and does a really good job with it. And obviously Kate McKinnon is brilliant.
So good.
But also, like, they really let women be kind of funny and gross and dumb and stupid and have all the things that the Ghostbusters films have. And the people who didn't like it, it's purely down to misogyny, whether they want to acknowledge it or not. That's the only reason. Because it's genuinely good. If you had exactly the same film with men, they would have loved it.
I know somebody who was ragging on the film, The Lady Ghostbusters, because they were like, oh, it was just Ghostbusters again, but now they've all got vaginas or whatever. But then Afterlife came out and he was like, oh my god, it's the best film I've ever seen. And I was like, no, shut your mouth. It's literally the same film, but Paul was there. Like, it's literally the same villain. It's the same, like, what are you talking about from your asshole?
I mean, there are not that many storylines you can do. It's Ghostbusters, right? Like,
yeah.
You've got to go bust some ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I came out of the cinema fully buzzing at that.
I watched it three times.
I'd said to my hubby as I came out, I was like, oh my god, I wish I'd had stuff like that when I was a kid. Because pretty much all I got was She-Ra, which is questionable.
This is the same thing. I have the same opinion about Rey, right? I have the same opinion about Ghostbusters. All of these things, like Star Trek, everything. I mean, Star Trek's always been pretty progressive, but like, you know, it continues to be progressive, which is great. But all these things where people are like, oh, we're doing women. And I'm like, shut the fuck? Oh, everyone's like, we don't need strong female characters. We've got Ripley and Buffy. And I'm like, oh my God, we've got characters from the 90s. We've got two. What? Oh, shut up. I don't care if sometimes they're bad. Like, I went to see the Marvels and it's not perfect. But you know what? It made me think of, like, going to see Mean Girls and Clueless and Legally Blonde and all of those, and Bring It On and all those stupid teen girl films that I love. Yeah. And they did it with superheroes. And I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah. Let teenage girls have superheroes that are like them. Mm-hmm. Stop making us think that we have to have, as a non-binary but raised female human, I still claim some element of teenage girlhood. I just let teenage girls and AFAB female-bodied humans have characters that are like them who are, and let those films not be perfect, because there's so many crap male films.
I've talked about this before, because I got on my high horse about Wonder Woman when it came out, because so many people were so quick to be like, oh, it was actually quite good. And I'm like, don't say actually, as though A, you don't believe that women could front and direct a superhero film, but B, like, why are we acting like this film had to be good, otherwise, you know, women weren't allowed to do cinema again? Like, women should be allowed to make shit things and do shit stuff sometimes, because men can do it all the fucking time. I get so mad about this. So cross, because I'm like, like, let us have everything that you... the one thing that really tickled me was back when Jodie Whittaker was announced as being the next Doctor Who, and, like, a bunch of people threw their collective toys out of the pram. And I saw somebody say, how am I supposed to relate to the Doctor, though? And I was like, but you've been expecting me to relate to the Doctor for the last fucking 70-odd fucking years, and it's been a... you're not going to let me have this one? I was livid. I went to town on this guy and then he blocked me on Twitter.
Oh my God, the amount of people I had to call out about it. I actually got so cross at somebody, I just stopped being able to hold my tongue and told them they needed to look at their internalized misogyny, and they just went off on it. And I was just like, you know what, I kind of don't care.
It's that interesting dissonance I find between, like, they can't understand why you want something to relate to. But then as soon as they feel like they've had something they relate to sort of taken away from them, in inverted commas, it's the end of the world. And I'm like, so representation matters, but only for you, apparently. That's how it works, is it?
Basically, at some point, I want to see a Sherlock Holmes series that's fronted by a woman as Sherlock Holmes, because there is no reason why you shouldn't have this, right?
Yeah.
And the amount of people who get so mad at me about this, and like, no, but we have woman. John was a woman. And I'm like, okay, look, I love John Watson as much as the next person. He's wonderful. He's a perfect human being, but he is the weaker of the two characters, and he is also the caretaker character.
Yeah.
Let Sherlock, as Sherlock, and I don't mean like Bones, let Sherlock Holmes, who is a mess of a human being, an autistic, weird ADHD little mess man, and keep it exactly the same but make it a woman, you'd hate it. And I want that show. You know what, I want lesbian Victorian detectives, which, to be fair, I am aware that Stephen Moffat did, and in Doctor Who, and I don't need to go and think about that, but I kind of really want it. But I also just want to have a version where Sherlock Holmes is a woman and is allowed to be as messy and also proud and dickheady and stubborn and all those other things, which no version really gets right. I really want it. People would hate it so much.
I think I would love it.
I think it'd be so good.
What gets me is those, like, sort of bad faith people as well, who try and say, oh well, so, like, we're not allowed to get cross if you make a male character female all of a sudden, but you're allowed to get cross if we make a black character white now. And I'm like, because it's... How do you not understand that it's different? Like, people were getting up in arms recently about, there's talk of Disney, I don't know how true it is, but there's talk of Disney doing a live action version of Princess and the Frog. And a lot of people said that they need to make sure, if they are keeping the story as being a woman in that particular time period in the bayou trying to open a restaurant, be a business owner, that they need to keep her black. It's essential to that story, that story of oppression in the background of all the, you know, froggy nonsense. And people were like, oh, so we're not allowed to make Tiana a white girl, but we can make Ariel black even though she's Nordic. And I'm like, she's a mermaid. She ain't anything. Bonk, just smacked my head off the wall. Like, what are we doing as Sawyer?
It's so different. Tiana's story is one about race.
Yes.
Specifically about race. And Ariel's is not.
Yeah.
Ariel's is about womanhood. And that is probably a more interesting story when you tell it. Well, technically Ariel's story is about a gay man being sad that he can't be gay, and that's a whole other kettle of fish.
Don't tell the nutters on the internet that.
So The Little Mermaid is actually a story written by a closeted homosexual man being really, really sad that he can't be with the person he loves because they are married and also a man and it's illegal. That's what that story is actually about. Would you like to talk about it?
Yes.
Yeah. Me coming in just going to fight. This is why I don't want my name to be too famous on the internet, because I'd just get the amount of shit I'd get.
Yeah. Don't worry, very few people listen to this show, so it won't be a problem.
Has opinions.
It's like I said before, it's hard to be a woman with opinions on the internet. But anyway,
back to the news.
I've just realised how long we've been talking. I only really briefly wanted to say that I saw Godzilla X Kong, which me and my hubby keep calling Godzilla Kiss Kong, and then we keep getting annoyed that they didn't kiss.
Well, isn't X in fan fiction just mean that's a ship?
Yeah. So I was fully like, is this the one where they're going to kiss? But they didn't. They did team up, but they didn't kiss. And the only spoiler I will give for this, because it is genuinely the most adorable thing I've ever seen on film. There is a bit of this movie. There are two bits of this movie where Godzilla uses the Colosseum as a giant dog bed. And it's the best fucking thing I've ever seen.
Okay, I'm going to look that up.
Cute. Oh my god, it's so cute. Just curled up inside the Colosseum. I lost my mind. I punched my husband in the leg when we were at the cinema. I was like, look how cute it is. He was like, stays cut. It's a real thing.
It is so cute. Oh my god, what?
I lost my mind in the cinema. Absolutely lost my mind.
Oh, he looks like a cat in a box.
It's so adorable.
Godzilla,
isn't
he?
Do you know what? I don't know. But if that fits, they sits.
if they fits. Definitely.
Oh, it's so cute.
Adorable. Okay.
Yes, but I really enjoyed that sticker. Film. Oh, there's got to be some of those on Etsy, I would have thought. Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was a really good film. I love Dan Stevens. Now, I might have just put the kiss of death on him, because I have a tendency to go, I love such and such, and then like 2 weeks later, it turns out they're a sex pest or something.
I really hope Dan Stevens isn't a sex pest.
Me too, because he is living his best little weirdo life, and I am so here for everything that he's doing.
In Downton Abbey, weirdo shit afterwards. Excellent.
Yeah, he plays an actual weirdo in this, but I love him. I don't really care about any of the human goings on, but it's such good, like, Kong and Zilla action that I can't. I read a review of it, a bad review, where they gave it like 2 out of 5 or something. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, it's like a Saturday morning cartoon of a movie. And I was like, yeah.
What do you want? I think it's so funny having this, and is it Godzilla 1? What's it called?
Yeah, Godzilla Minus One.
Coming out within like a very short time from each other is very funny to me, because one of them is clearly like a cinematic masterpiece.
Oh my god, it's so
And one
good.
Of them's this.
Well, this is one of the things I love about Godzilla, is that we are allowed to have these different versions going on at once. Yeah. So if you are into your popcorn, oh my god, there's a bit where, you know how Godzilla does that like power up thing and their scales on their back
Like the coolest shit ever, you know.
In this film, they borrow like powers from one of the other monsters, and their like power up goes pink, and I was like, losing my mind. So yes, I love it. It's so good. Like, I was just absolutely nuts. But I also loved Minus One. Fully made me blart in the cinema. So like, I love that I can go and see like a serious, sad.
So my friend described Godzilla versus Kong, or X Kong, whatever it's called, as he literally was like, they were literally like, I was just sat there. And then time passed, and then I came out of the cinema, and I'd seen it, and it was like, I didn't realise that I'd been in there for 3.5 hours, or however long it is, you know, it's not that long, but you know what I mean, it just, stuff happened, and it was exciting, and then I left. That's the only way I can describe it, and I'm like, cool.
Yeah, that's exactly, it was like a lot of monsters punched a lot of other monsters. I feel like,
so I have quite a big TV. I feel like this is one of those things that I'm going to settle. I'm going to, once it's on streaming, I'm going to just dark room, watch it on the big TV.
And, absolutely. It's very worth it.
Because like I said, I don't really have time to go to the cinema at the moment. It's quite expensive. So, as we all know. So I'm kind of picking and choosing what I'm going to go and see. And then what I'm going to watch on streaming, which I feel bad about because I want to see everything, but you can't. Mm-hmm. It's expensive.
Yeah, it is really expensive.
What I am going to go and see is, I've got to book tickets for actually, is Nye, the cinema screening they're doing from the National Theatre. And I'm going to point and go, it's Dave Monteith!
I know that guy!
In an aggressive manner in the cinema. I'm like,
I didn't know they were doing a cinema screen. I'm going to make a note of that.
Yeah, I think it's like 26th or something. They're doing a screening. Because I wanted to go and see it live, but again, time, money, all that kind of stuff. But when I saw they were doing this, I was like, yeah, let's do that. I want to go and see that. Anyway, I'm glad that I shall watch the Godzilla movie on my big telly at home.
Yeah, don't expect like a big serious story. Just expect.
Oh, I'm not. It's Godzilla, right?
Monstery fun. Yeah.
I was just amazed when there was serious Godzilla movies. I was like, oh, serious ones. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I really
just thought it was all like Pacific Rim.
I really like Shin Godzilla and Godzilla Minus One. I realised after we went to see this, because my hubby went through a phase during lockdown of like trying to watch the equivalent to a movie a day. And there was one year where I think he watched about 480 movies. It was actual insanity. But because of that, I think I've seen about 20 Godzilla and Kong movies. We've still got quite a few to get through. But this is like, it's quite funny because if you look at like the top like few of my letterbox list of like Godzilla adjacent movies, it's like Godzilla Minus One and then this and then Shin Godzilla and then like Godzilla versus Kong, which was from a couple of years ago and was also really stupid. Like Kong was running around with an axe, big giant axe. All right.
I like the fact that King Kong and Godzilla have ended up being in the same franchise as each other. I mean, it was always destined to happen, but it is very amusing to me that they are very distinctly different things from very distinctly different mindsets. It kind of feels like the American Dream fighting, or the kind of monster version of America fighting the sort of monster version of Japan that it created.
Yeah.
But it's entirely its fault, let's be honest. I kind of find that quite ironic. I'm sure somebody has done a deep dive academic paper into that because, I for series three of the podcast... King Kong and Godzilla. There we go.
Let me know if you ever do a Turtles episode, because I will be all over that like white on rice.
Oh, I will at some point. It's just convincing Vivian to let me talk about the Ninja Turtles for an hour. I want to talk about Ninja Turtles.
Oh my god,
I really like Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
This very specific brand of Ninja Turtles.
See, I'm one of those people that like, I like nearly everything Turtlesy, so I think people don't really trust my opinions on them. So whenever I say anything that's like even vaguely negative, they're like, whoa, that's got to be shit.
Yeah.
That's got to be really shit. If even Stacey's like, huh? Anyway, was there anything else that you wanted to waffle about? Because the only other thing I had on my list was the Fallout TV show, but I don't need to talk about that right now because it's only had a couple of episodes. And really my only note so far is that Walton Goggins is very good value, isn't he?
Yes.
What a great man, what a great name.
And the character, I enjoy the fact that I saw a wonderful tweet that was like, all incel arguments about not being sexy enough are now null and void because so many women in your life are writing fanfic with this man.
Do you know what? Is it a total tangent now to talk about wrestling of all things? But I love wrestling, and one of the wrestling podcasts that I listen to, Waffly Bollocks, did, which is a brilliant name for it, did a few like Twitter polls the other day to try and figure out like basically who everybody thinks like the top totties on the men's roster and the ladies roster in a particular in AEW, like. And I was watching this unfold, and one of the things they were doing was trying to figure out if the men could guess which wrestlers the ladies would choose as being the most handsome. So they were all listing like the proper like beefcake guys.
Yeah.
But then all of us were just swinging in there with like Eddie Kingston, who is just a disaster looking man. Like he's just a man who looks like you know, somebody's dad next door, like a bit of a, bit of a pot belly, like just rolls in, constantly angry. But he's just got this proper, like, oh, he'll protect you vibe about him.
Okay.
And it was really interesting to me the different answers that were coming out of those polls. I mean,
I feel like men have never seen what women find attractive. Like,
no, I think they just think anything pretty and shiny will be like, oh. But like 9 times out of 10, for me, it's more
Benedict Cumberbatch, for Christ's sake.
See, for me, it's It's people who make me laugh. So I will, if you're a comedian, any gender, that presses any of my comedy buttons, I probably fancy you. Sorry.
But like, I think men do not realize that. I think the top thing that women say about men that's attractive, or a partner that's attractive, is somebody who makes them laugh and somebody who makes them feel safe.
You're safe? Yeah.
It's not whether, and safe doesn't mean physically, it means emotionally. And like that they know you're going to be in their corner, right? And that's why dad book guides and like D&D nerds and all this sort of thing, you know, they're the one. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Like,
how did we get here?
I don't know. But anyway, we're talking about call out. Yeah. Also Goggins. Yeah. What have I been doing recently? I haven't actually been watching that much TV recently. I've actually been reading a lot because I've been writing a lot, and therefore I have to refuel every so often.
Mm-hmm.
I'm rereading all of the Jeeves and Wooster books because
okay,
they're very easy, and you just go, everything's going to be fine, and there's no stress. And Bertie's the most stress is that Bertie might get engaged, and then they might get disengaged, and that's it. Like, that's what's going to happen. The most stressful book is the one where Jeeves is like, no, I can't stay with you anymore, I'm going to go and leave because you keep playing the banjolele badly. And then by the end of the book, they get back together again, and it's essentially just a slight threat of divorce. That's it. They're just really married. And in my head, and Stephen Fry reads the audiobooks. And so it's just, Stephen Fry reading me audiobooks, because I can't listen to the other Stephen Fry audiobooks that I have because reasons.
Uh-huh.
And I missed that.
Yeah.
So when I found out that he'd read most of the Jeeves and Wooster books and all the Blandings books as well, which is next on my list to do, I was just like, yeah, let's go for it. This could be great. And it is great, because he does a very fun, the way he does Bertie is not him doing an impression of Hugh Laurie, but it does it's very clearly he's influenced by Hugh Laurie, which is wonderful. And I like very much. So yeah, that's quite nice. And I've just finished a book called The Axeman's Jazz, which is based on, it's a fictionalized version of a true crime thing that really did happen in New Orleans in the 1920s, which I listened to a true crime podcast about the real thing, about this axe man who was going around murdering people in New Orleans, and then sent a letter to the local newspaper basically saying, every house that's playing jazz, I will pass over as the angel of death. It's great. Read the letter, because it is really, it's just up there as one of the most insane things ever. But brilliantly written. And this book is based on that, using a mix of fictionalized versions and real things. And like the police reports and stuff are pretty much real and things, which is really interesting. And so I've read that, and I read it in I haven't read a full book, like just sitting like, gotta get to the end, in ages, which was very nice. It was very, really good. And because I'm finishing a manuscript at the moment, and so of course my brain's now going, what's the next thing you're going to write? And the next thing is set in the same period but in London, and so it was kind of like, oh, this is a quite a nice little, it's not the same, but it's got the same vibes. And I'm going to pick up the second one by that writer as well, because they've kind of continued those characters forward into another sort of semi-true crime thing. One of the characters is Louis Armstrong. So, yeah, it is sort of real, pseudo-real, which is very strange. Him at about 18, 19, before he's big and all that, which is it's quite an interesting read. I definitely recommend it. I don't think it'd be everybody's cup of tea. It's very descriptive heavy, because it kind of leans into that noir thing quite a lot.
Yeah.
But definitely worth read. Giving it a try.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, I've been playing a lot of Pathologic because I hate myself. I like pain.
Yeah.
I like Russian plagues. No. And I listen to an awful lot of podcasts. I got sucked into the History Hit Network, which is like Dan Snow's one. And now I listen to like almost every single podcast in there apart from Dan Snow's actual one, because I find him irritating and patronizing. But all the others are pretty good. So yeah, that's what I've been doing. That's that. I really like history. I really like reading things about history. I like reading things set in the past. So that's what I'm going to be doing, which is very insane as somebody who is currently writing fantasy and therefore going, I don't want to read anything fantasy related because it will make my brain, it will influence my brain too much.
Yeah.
I'm very much somebody who cannot read the genre I'm writing at the time that I'm writing it. I'll read a lot of it
just
beforehand.
Pinch all the ideas.
And yeah, it's just because otherwise, exactly. You'll be like, oh no, what have I done? It's not good. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing. Pokemon. My partner's playing a lot of Pokemon, so I'm seeing that a lot.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, more Pokemon. Okay.
I've just finished my annual bookworm challenge, fundraising bookworm challenge that I do every year for the BCHC charity, which is like a month long thing that starts on World Book Day. And I read 15 books in a month.
Wow.
I don't recommend it. By the end of it, I was like, this feels like homework and I hate it. But I did read some really good books. I think I talked last time about The City We Became, which is an N.K. Jemisin story, a bit like a sort of squiggly eldritch horror, but in modern day New York, which was really good. And I also read The Queen's Assassin by James Barclay, which is a sort of, how would I even describe it? It's like a sort of war story, but it's also about like society and how we treat people who are maybe a little bit different to the norm.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. It's very good. And then I read a few autobiographies and discovered I don't like Billy Crystal. I thought I liked Billy Crystal, so I bought his autobiography, and then I read it and I was like, oh, you're a bit of a penis, in my opinion, folks. Just, you know, don't tell him that. Yeah, no, wasn't very, there's like a whole chapter that is dedicated to him just sort of ranting about things he doesn't personally like, which is like, it's fine. I mean, I do that a lot on this podcast. Like, it's fine to air your grievances. But when one of your grievances is just fat people existing, you can sort of do one, actually, mate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how about now? But what was annoying was, because I'd already spent like a day reading like half of the book by that point, I was like, I can't not finish it now because it won't count towards my challenge.
You've got to get to the end.
I've got to finish the, so I read the whole thing and I was very annoyed by the end. So I wouldn't really recommend that. Shall we recommend the listeners some lovely songs to put in their ears?
Oh, absolutely.
Yay. Now I sent you the song that I was gonna pick, and I don't know if you listened to it or not.
I'm gonna be honest, I didn't, because my brain's made of, I got home from 2 weeks in sunny Sicily yesterday, and so my brain is currently just like
that's absolutely fair. Yeah, I picked a song called Working Out by Donny Benet, who is a chap that I had absolutely no prior knowledge of, even though he's been knocking around in the music industry for several years now. I don't know how Rich happened upon him. Donny Benet is like a character played by this sort of like Australian, he's not sort of like Australian, he is Australian, he's an Australian musician, and it's, the music is sort of, it's, he describes it as post-disco funky synth 80s pop.
I love that. Sounds great.
And it's wonderful, and what I love about it is that the character is essentially sort of seedy looking 70s porno style man, sings songs vaguely alluding to maybe sex perhaps. so there's one song, for example, that's called Second Dinner, and the video is him just sort of like sexily eating foods out of a directly out of a fridge, and it's all very much sort of like he's absolutely talking about a couple of rounds of bonking.
Yeah.
But it's just like this weird sort of innuendo about, you know, lunch. And it's so wonderful. It's really funny, but at the same time, it's also like, you know, genuine bangers.
Yeah.
I absolutely love him now that I know that he exists. And I was saying to Rich the other day that, like, if he does a tour and he comes to the UK, I have to go, even though I think the crowd will be filled with just the weirdest possible selection of people, probably.
Yeah, I can absolutely imagine it will be.
Yeah, so yeah, highly recommend like all of the songs, but I particularly chose Working Out because I think it's very it's jaunty and fun, and it feels like it would be very much at home on like an 80s Rosemary Conley aerobics DVD.
I love that.
It's great. It's absolutely great. Go on, spring a song on me.
Oh, okay. So I've been listening to the Toxhards, who've just recently released their first proper EP. And if anybody has spent any small amount of time on the internet, they may have come across Angus the prize-winning hog as a song on TikTok. Because it gets used as like a TikTok sound and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's a very strange song. It reminds me a lot of sort of System of a Down kind of thing. But that's not the song I particularly want to recommend, because that song is actually very different from pretty much everything else they do. It's brilliant and it definitely fits when you listen to the EP, but it is very different from pretty much everything else, which I can only describe as 1950s sort of rock and roll, sort of boppy rock and roll, if it was made by nihilists.
Okay,
and it's fantastic. Amazing. And you can tell that they're really, really into like heavy metal and all that kind of stuff, because every so often there's just like hints of it coming through. But it's this very kind of I can only describe it as like 50s rock kind of vibe. And the song I particularly wanted to recommend is Doom Bop, which is just, I love it. I absolutely love it. It's great. There's another song by them called The Coffee Song, which is basically about how you can't, it, literally the premise is you can't get through the day without coffee, and just like how progressively worse that gets. and the EP is kind of all songs like this. And Angus, the prize-winning hog, which is a political statement. The reason I say it reminds me a lot of System of a Down is it because it has the same vibes as when you listen to like something like BYOB for the first time and you don't quite get what they're trying to talk about, and then you listen back and you go, oh, there was a big message here. Maybe not BYOB, that one's quite obvious, but like things like Chop Suey or whatever, like when you start really getting into the lyrics of these songs. And I think Angus, the prize winning hog, when you actually listen to it, is like, oh, this is a political protest song.
Mm-hmm.
Really at its core, but it's very funny, and I think a lot of people haven't heard it as this funny little sound on TikTok or whatever, or seen like part of the video or whatever. They don't necessarily listen to the lyrics, and the videos are all wonderful. They made all the videos themselves, are all on YouTube and all this sort of stuff. They are very good and very strange. But yeah, the Toxhards, they're very good. I like them very much, and a Doom Bop is great. It's a massive conversation about the American work ethic and, living in current modern day America and stuff like that. It's a really it's very nihilistic but very, very funny. So I would definitely recommend that.
Excellent. Oh, that's amazing. Well, as ever, both of those songs, if they are on Spotify, excellent. We'll be on the Stacey's Parlour recommends. I've forgotten what the title of it is. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. The playlist, the big old playlist. Holly, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you.
It's been wonderful to be here.
Did you want to just do another quick plug of where people can get your stuff?
So the book is called A History of Fans and Fandom, The Power and Passion of Fan Culture, and it's available everywhere. Amazon, if you must, Waterstones, Barnes & Noble, any bookshop you can order it through, get it online, you get it directly from the publisher, which is Pen & Sword. But if you just Google or your search engine of choice, A History of Fans and Fandom, you should find it, hopefully. Please buy it, give it a review. It's still on pre-order at the moment because it should be out, but there's a shipping crisis, so they're coming. You know, it is what it is. The podcast is I'm a Fan of That, and that's on everything as well. It's on Spotify, Apple Music, Apple Podcasts even it is now, isn't it? Again, Amazon, of course. And if you like fan stuff, you like pop culture, it's called I'm a Fan of That, but it's definitely more of a pop culture anthropological podcast at this point. We've got a whole episode coming up about the first sci-fi novel and what was the first, sci-fi story, I should say, and what was the first sci-fi story, because I will argue the toss with everybody on that one. I'm sorry, I love Mary Shelley, but she's not first. Not by a long fucking way. I think the ancient Greeks might kick down some doors.
Yeah.
No, they tend to have a hand in it. Anyway, so I'm a Fan of That is pretty much everywhere. It's on YouTube if you would like subtitles. That's where we have our version with for people who might not be so great with just listening. And you can find me on Instagram and Tumblr, the only two social medias I still use. And that's Littlest Prince, which is LILIST Prince, all one word. We'll put it in the show notes, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's where you can find me. And at some point this week, I will be remaking a website, but I don't know what the address for that website is yet. I haven't done it. Stacey to put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I was going to say, with how long it takes me to edit episodes, you might have done it and sorted it before.
Buy the book. Please leave reviews if you like it. Don't if you don't like it. It's not that helpful.
And go and listen to Reagan and Starburst. And
oh, you should. You
make
should
me feel better about the fact that I won't.
You should, and then convince me to do a third season, which will definitely happen at some point. And if you like random video game journalism, you'll probably find me in any issue of Play magazine at any given point. So,
excellent.
I do tend to have opinions.
I love having opinions, just not near certain people. Hey, so that was a full episode. That's a really long episode, and I would apologise, but I think it might be gold, so I won't. although maybe I'll apologise for quite how much turtle talk there was this time round, considering it's not an episode of Podcast in a Half Shell, but oh well, don't worry about it, it's fine. Everyone, you can find me at Stacey's Parlour pretty much everywhere. I still have not got to grips with using Threads or Blue Sky or any of the other fake Twitters. but I'm sure one day I'll learn how to socials. And in the meantime, find me. Instagram's probably the best bet, unless you are averse to seeing my face with a microphone near it repeatedly. Because that's essentially all my feed is. Anyway, shut up, Stace. Thank you again, Holly. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Wonderful to be here. I've had a great time. We talked about the turtles. I never get to talk about the turtles.
We should just do an episode of something just solely about the 2003 show, because
maybe you should come on my podcast and we'll do that.
Maybe, yeah.
Come on up mine, and Vivian will sit there and go, "What the hell are you talking about?"
Don't make me watch Good Genes again, because I might cry. Anyway, end the episode, Stace. The end. Goodbye, everybody. Bye. I love you. Thank you for listening to Stacey's Pop Culture Parlour. To get in touch with me, the titular Stace, you can follow me on Twitter at Stacey's Parlour, send an email to stacey'sparlour@gmail.com, or come and join the Stacey's Pop Culture Parlour Facebook group. If you'd like to leave a review for the show, please do so on Apple Podcasts or over at podchaser.com. If you like what you heard enough to want to give me some money, which would be quite spectacular actually, you can go to ko-fi.com/Stacey's Parlour. That's ko-fi.com/Stacey's Parlour. The music that you're hearing right now is by the amazing band Starbomb, and you should really check them out on Spotify, iTunes, or on their website. Thanks for stopping by, and I'll see you next month. Mwah!